Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for November the 16th. In the year of our Lord, 2021, this is our one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America. That is our guide. And absolutely, we're convinced the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers, one of the great restorative solutions we still have at our fingertips. As you know, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. A quick recap of yesterday's show, then an incredible guest straight ahead on your radio. We had on Lowell Nelson, CampaignForLiberty.org, RonPaulInstitute.org, doing a phenomenal job. We talked about our website, CallForCivility.com. We talked about the welcome, the mission statement, and the pledge. Sign your pledge today. Donate if you have the heart to help with the call for civility. We talked about the rules of civility. George Washington as kind of the pretext for the discussion. We talked about Biden gas pump stickers. I did that. Trend goes viral. They're putting stickers all over the country on gas pumps, on store shelves, and it's Biden. Picture of Biden pointing at the gas or whatever price we're talking about and saying, hey, I did that, meaning, hey, I caused all the prices to rise. The problem that I have with it is you don't have the right to violate people's private property. It's my gas station. It's my store shelf if I own the store or the gas station. You have no right to put stickers and defile my property, ladies and gentlemen. I submit to you that it's not good. It's the latest after the Let's Go Brandon meme, the Kamala's a whore agenda. They're also literally promoting this agenda that I believe is no good, folks. Private property matters. We also talked about in the Utah State Legislature, they approved SB 2004. This bill provides for religious, medical, and personal exemptions for the COVID-19 mandate. It also forces an employer not to keep records, the status of a person's vaccination records. So it's pretty good news. There's some exceptions. It's not far enough, but it's a good start. We also talked about Austria borders absolutely locked down for the unvaccinated. They're going to be carrying out spot checks, cops in the streets. I mean, we're talking third world nation stuff. It's crazy town. We also talked about a letter from Lowell Nelson's employer encouraging him to be vaccinated, even though there's a stay by multiple courts on the topic. And so he says, hey, I've been pushing back against my employer big time. We also talked about the Fifth Circuit Court upholds decision to halt Biden's mandate. So time will tell on that. We talked about Federalist Paper 46, revisited. We're talking about the reality check of nullification. States need to quit going to the courts. They need to nullify now. We also talked about COVID-19 vaccine effectiveness declines precipitously, an incredible article written by Ron Paul. We talked about the CDC director, Walensky, has been telling us since August that the shots do not prevent infection from the virus and does not prevent transmission of the virus. So the vaccine literally isn't even a vaccine according to the normal term. They've changed the term of what vaccine means, where they've excluded the term immunity from that. So we know the vaccines aren't really safe or effective or anything else. The CDC also says there is no record of naturally immune people transmitting COVID-19. So you get the vaccine, and there's a lot of cases of them transmitting COVID-19. But if you have natural immunity, you're not transmitting COVID-19, ladies and gentlemen. That's important to understand. Feds can't enforce vaccine mandates without a lot of help, ladies and gentlemen. So we hold the cards if we, the people, will stand together. That's really important. We also talked about the former Green Beret. He's a veteran. His name is Jeremy Brown. He's a January 6th Capitol prisoner. He announces he's going on a hunger strike. He says he's been wronged. He got put in prison. He never even went into the Capitol, ladies and gentlemen, but he's in jail. He's going on a hunger strike, and his claim is because the FBI tried to get him to be an agent provocateur, and he refused and blew the whistle on them. That's why they're making him such a political prisoner. Our prayers are with Jeremy. Number of U.S. workers voluntarily leaving their jobs in August and September have reached an all-time high. And people are just sick of it. They want you to believe the vaccine mandate has nothing to do with it. Nice try. Almost got me. Is this the fifth COVID-19 wave? Experts fear we may just simply start to call it winter. Yeah, experts say the latest surge is probably here to stay. We're going to have the cocoa every winter, just like the flu and the cold and everything else they're now claiming. Vermont, believe it or not, has one of the highest vaccination rates in the nation, and it's experiencing a surge, even though they've got more vaccinated people than anywhere else in the country. How long will the second and third doses of vaccines work? Well, they don't know. They say it's an open question with no data available yet. So how do they know the vaccine is safe and effective if they don't know how long it'll last? Well, it's really safe and effective for at least an hour if you don't die first. Crazy town, folks. Absolutely crazy. They flat out tell you they don't have the data, and then they lie and run around and act like it's safe and effective. Then they tell you we don't even know. Oklahoma Governor to Biden, no vaccine mandate for our troops. Well, I pray the governor has enough guts to push back. We got to nullify now, folks. That's a recap of the broadcast that took place yesterday. Hard-hitting talk at your fingertips, always. LibertyRoundtable.com, LovingLiberty.net, spread the word. Download the iPhone and Android apps, live and on-demand radio at your fingertips. Feedback loop where we can hear from you what you think. Donation capabilities, we always could use the donations and the support for the Widow's Might Radio Networks. And best of all, you can follow the Twitter feed and keep an eye on some of the things we're tweeting about. In addition to incredible talk radio around the clock, LovingLiberty.net, spread the word, tell the tale. James Edwards, well-known talk show host in his own right, author of the book called Racism Schmacism, does an award-winning broadcast every Saturday night called The Political Cesspool. James, welcome back to Liberty Roundtable Live, sir.
Sam, it's great to be here, and there is so much to talk about. Where should we begin?
Well, let's begin by saying it's amazing to me that you got the, what do you want to call it, Unite the Right Charlottesville trial happening right now. You got the, what's that kid's name that shot everybody supposedly?
Rittenhouse.
Rittenhouse trial going on. You got a trial in Georgia going on. You just finished an Alex Jones trial. They're attacking him over the Sandy Hook reporting, and those trials are culminating. You've got all kinds of events that have happened over the last several years, but they're all culminating and being executed right now or carried out right now before Thanksgiving and Christmas. It's really an attack on, they would say, some would say the white nationalists, others would say Christians everywhere, others would say truth tellers. I mean, it's an attack on us all, sir. Let's start there.
We talked about this last night on the phone, Sam, you and I did, and what you're talking about is the situation in Charlottesville where you have this civil trial as a result of the incident on August the 12th, 2017, what is called the Unite the Right rally. You have the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, quite famously, up there in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And then, of course, a little bit lesser known, but also getting a lot of attention, is the trial of the three men in Georgia who shot Ahmaud Arbery. All three of those incidents happened in different states at different times and in different years, but they all went to trial literally the same week. It's amazing. I don't know what's going on there, but it's certainly noteworthy. Now, I only have two eyes and two ears, just like everyone else, and so I have zeroed in. Any one of these three trials would quite rightly dominate coverage on my show and, of course, demand a substantial amount of coverage on your show as well, as they have, because they're all important in different ways. Obviously, the right to defend yourself in the situation with Rittenhouse when under attack. Do you have that right if you're not standing in the threshold of your own home? That's a big question. And in Charlottesville, obviously, the right to assemble, the right to free speech, the right to legally obtain a permit to hold a demonstration at a public park. This is something that's all coming under fire, and so for different reasons, these are all very important cases. But I have zeroed in on the Charlottesville trial because I know some of the people involved, and that was something that we covered quite heavily. We didn't organize it. We didn't have a hand in the planning or the participation of it, but we did cover it extensively, and we've been cited in books and in other articles as part of our coverage. So I have paid a keen interest to that, and I could break it down for you and your audience.
in great detail. We'll drill into that in just a second, but I want to really highlight, though, the Alex Jones fiasco right now going on about his free speech and his right to report and say what he thinks and wants. You've got the January 6th fiasco battle still going on, still being covered immensely. We've been covering that in great detail. There's so many issues, and here's what's interesting. Every one of them literally relates to all five of your First Amendment guarantees, ladies and gentlemen. And this is all culminating at the same time when Joe Biden wants you to shut up and take his vaccination, when Facebook and Twitter are shutting everybody down, when, you know what, do you believe that there was fraud in the election? Do you believe that the vaccine mandate is overreach? Do you, all these free speech things in question, and every one of them, they're backing into violating other rights, whether it be your right to defend yourself, your right to keep and bear arms. By the way, there's those cases weaving their way through the courts right now as well. So there is so much being thrown against us. It is shocking. And when we talk about the Charlottesville rally and Unite the Right trial, here's the interesting thing. There's a group that filed a lawsuit. I guess it's called the The Nonprofit Integrity First for America. Nonprofit.
You know, these nonprofits are anything but poor, though. They're anything but poor. They may be nonprofit, but they've raised between $15 and $20 million to prosecute these people.
But here's what I find fascinating. Sure. Donald Trump's been the guy talking about America first, and everybody's mocked him for that. Now they got a nonprofit with $20 million that's America first kind of an idea. What's going on around here? We'll talk about it with James Edwards in seconds on your radio.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
I've got James Edwards with me, ladies and gentlemen, well-known talk host, thepoliticalcesspool.org, incredible reporter in this case. We're talking about the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally and subsequent trial, ladies and gentlemen. Believe it or not, the suit was brought by the nonprofit organization, which has a lot of money, though, called Integrity First for America. Now, I find it interesting. They've got kind of this America First idea in their name, but they couldn't be more opposite from Trump if they tried. But where does all their money come from? James, who are these people?
Well, this is a left-wing activist group, basically, and they have done a lot of fundraising. As a matter of fact, you can go and you can see ads where they are raising money, matching funds up to $200,000 for each individual or organization that will help them hashtag sue a Nazi. And they have even said, and this is something interesting that has come out. I have listened. There's a teleconference line that you can call into, and it puts you right inside the courtroom. This, unlike the Rittenhouse trial, is not being broadcast in any way, shape, or form, but there is a call-in line, ostensibly for press, but it's public, so if you get the number, anybody can call in. You could call in. Your listeners could call in, and you listen to it. And one of the things I've learned in listening to this trial every day, it's now in its fourth week, is that the plaintiff's attorneys refused to enter into mediation. So normally what you would do, this is a civil lawsuit, which is different than criminal lawsuit. Nobody's going to go to jail here, but they could be ruined financially for multi-generations. This could be, you could get some sort of a judgment that would just ruin your family for generations to come. I mean, some crazy runaway jury type billion-dollar judgment for the pain and suffering these plaintiffs supposedly suffered. But the group bringing this lawsuit would not enter into negotiations for settlements. You were supposed to do that before going to court, and they refused to do that. They refused to do that, saying, we don't negotiate with Nazis. Well, of course, it's very much the typical exaggeration to say that people who went to Charlottesville, Virginia, to defend the monument of Robert E. Lee, a great Christian, in my opinion, the greatest American, I call him that, a little bit of a stretch to say that everybody that was there was a Nazi, but that's what they're going with. This reeks of a SLAPP lawsuit, S-L-A-P-P. That's called a strategic lawsuit against public participation. And it refers to a lawsuit that's filed in retaliation for speaking out on a public issue or controversy. And so the purpose of this is to intimidate, to censor, to silence critics by burdening them with the cost of a legal defense until they abandon their criticism or opposition. So that's what's going on here. The goals are for the co-defendants, and there are 24 different individuals and organizations that are co-defendants in the Charlottesville suit. They want them to succumb to fear, intimidation, mounting legal costs, or simple exhaustion. So that's what we've got here, and there's some questions to the legality of that. I think that if the plaintiff's attorneys were really concerned with their plaintiffs, and it's a big case, okay, so there's about a dozen co-plaintiffs and about 24 co-defendants. A lot of these co-defendants never met with each other. They never spoke with each other. They never even knew each other until after the fact. They just so happened to all be there at that day and time on August the 12th, 2017 at the Unite the Right rally. But the allegation is that they conspired together, even though they didn't know one another or speak to one another. They all conspired together for there to be racial violence, that they went there with the express intent of engaging in racial violence, which I think is absurd. Now, we mentioned the SLAPP lawsuit and what I think is really going on here. This they would not negotiate. They want, and they've even said, we're going to shut down these individuals and these organizations. So that's what the plaintiff's attorneys are up to. If they really cared for their plaintiffs, there is no doubt that some of the plaintiffs were injured on that day. You know, again, emotional damages, that's a whole different can of worms. Some of them were, though, physically injured. And I think if the plaintiff's attorneys really cared for their plaintiffs, they would have gone after the people truly responsible for the violence that day, and that is the city of Charlottesville. That is the state of Virginia. That is Governor Terry McAuliffe. That is the police, the Department of Charlottesville, who were told to stand down, who ensured that there would be violence, where you have these two conflicting and hostile groups that are being put in the same place at the same time. We have seen video after video, Sam, of the police standing there watching a melee completely begin and take place over the course of a couple of hours. They did nothing, no arrest. The police just stood there and watched as people are literally getting beaten and getting hit with projectiles and feces and urine. It was the most, I've never seen anything like it. Police just completely not doing their job. That's who should have been sued.
Not only did the police not do their job, but they literally set things up to force the two crowds together, to literally force one crowd even to extract themselves from the melee, to literally go through the other crowd to get free. In other words, it was more than just idly standing by, James.
Well, that's absolutely right. They did insure it. And you got to remember, now say what you will about the Unite the Right participants. And again, if you have 5,000 people there, there's going to be some people. And this was what Trump famously said. There was good people on both sides. I don't know how many good people were on the other side, but I know that there were some good people amongst the people who have been cast as the villains in this play, and that's the Unite the Right participants, because I know some of them. And there's a book written about this, and we've talked about it. And you talk about mothers and people going up there thinking that they would go and go to a pro-Southern rally and then go play golf afterwards. I mean, nobody expected this. But I will say, too, though, that what's going on in court is a real lack of any evidence of a conspiracy. When you think of a conspiracy, you think of people, well, conspiring together, maybe in a smoke-filled room, or at least talking with one another, not people that never even knew one another. I mean, how does that work? But what the plaintiff's attorneys have been effective in doing, and I must say this, is they have gotten a lot of really reckless and immature comments that some of the co-defendants, some, not all, have said to one another, or said on different podcasts or on message forums, where they're basically shooting their mouths off and they're saying some things that are certainly violent in nature. Now, does that prove that there was a conspiracy? No, I mean, that's just tough talk. I mean, people talk tough. If somebody cuts you off in traffic, you say, man, I hope they die or I could kill them. Well, of course you don't mean it, but there is a case precedent that went to the Supreme Court that defends even this as freedom of speech, and certainly not something that actionable. But it does go back to the old saying, don't say anything, whether it's jokingly or not, and we certainly would hope it would be, but don't say anything in the privacy of your own home, in public, or anywhere that you don't want read back to you in court. So I think that the plaintiff's attorneys have been successful in at least muddying the waters with the jury by having some of these random statements be read, said, aha, see, we told you they went there to commit violence, even though, of course, I'm sure that the other side said all of that and worse, and we'll find out when the defense is able to mount this case. To give you just a little bit of perspective on the timing of all of this, so the Kyle Rittenhouse case is already in closing arguments, and it started a little bit after the Charlottesville trial began. The Charlottesville trial is now in its fourth week, and the prosecution is still laying out the facts, and the facts are, or their facts, or their, what they're bringing to the table is a bunch of irreverent comments. So the defense will get to mount a defense, and that is supposed to start today or tomorrow after 4 weeks. And one thing you got to remember is facts versus emotions. The city of Charlottesville hired a former federal prosecutor by the name of Timothy Heafy. He was hand-selected by the city of Charlottesville itself to write an investigative report to come to the findings of what happened. This guy was a former federal prosecutor, handpicked by the city of Charlottesville itself, and his findings were that the vast majority of the violence was a result of the actions taken by the so-called Antifa, the people who were there to oppose those who were there to defend the Lee statue, if that makes sense. And I think in many ways that's going to completely obliterate what the plaintiffs, the picture the plaintiffs' attorneys have been trying to paint, that official city-sanctioned report, I think will do that, along with the video evidence, just countless hours of video evidence of Unite the Right participants just walking and being attacked by people in the periphery that are lined up with Antifa and Black Lives Matter. But, again, the way I see things as a newsman or as a radio guy and somebody who has followed this stuff for years versus what your average juror will see, well, who's to say what a jury will think and believe and what their thought process is going to be? But it's all going to come out in the wash sometime around Thanksgiving is when this trial is expected to end. And if it goes badly for these co-defendants, it's going to have a real chilling effect on the freedom of speech, your right to get a permit, which these people did. They got a permit and be able to hold a dissident, a rally from a dissident point of view. Very, very scary. Big stakes here. I think bigger than people realize.
And by the way, they call it a slap lawsuit for a reason. That acronym is very interesting as well. We'll break it all down just for you with James Edwards, Liberty Roundtable Live.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
President Biden told Chinese President Xi Jinping at the start of Monday night's virtual summit that he's looking forward to a candid and forthright discussion on how to establish common sense guardrails between the two superpowers. Biden has historically said that he knows Xi better than any other world leader. It should be noted President Biden did not mention COVID-19 once to President Xi. Mark and Patricia McCloskey, the St. Louis couple who had faced gun charges after arming themselves against Black Lives Matter protesters near their home last year, are in Kenosha, Wisconsin to support Kyle Rittenhouse as the jury deliberates. They said, "We think Mr. Rittenhouse has been politically prosecuted, as were we, and we're hoping that the jury will find him not guilty on all counts and that he can go home a free man." President Biden signed into law a $1 trillion infrastructure bill at a White House ceremony on Monday. Roughly one-tenth of the money will go to traditional infrastructure projects. USA Radio News.
With confusion around vaccinations, masks, and public screenings, it's important to know the symptoms of COVID and its variants. Fever is the leading sign, so make sure to use an accurate thermometer for your family. Only the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer has been proven accurate with more than 100 clinical studies. Non-contact thermometers have no clinical evidence behind them and cannot be relied on. Be vigilant and be accurate with Exergen. Learn more at Exergen.com.
Exergen is changing the way the world takes temperature.
Just in time for Christmas, Mike Lindell has dropped the price of the standard classic MyPillow, regularly $69.98 to $19.98. Now, queen and king size slightly higher, but that price includes a free press and pack bag so you can take your MyPillow with you anywhere. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, use my promo code USA, or call 1-800-951-8175. Support Mike Lindell and American Jobs and give MyPillow for Christmas.
The Treasury Secretary is blaming the pandemic for America's financial doldrums.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen blamed the current U.S. inflation rate to the generalized crisis caused by the coronavirus pandemic and said that she expects the situation to stabilize within a year, although this depends on how the pandemic evolves.
The pandemic has been calling the shots for the economy and for inflation. And if we want to get inflation down, I think continuing to make progress against the pandemic is the most important thing we can do.
In a CBS interview, Yellen said that she believed that prices will return to their normal levels sometime during the second half of next year. From the USA Radio News, West Texas Bureau, I'm Brad Bernards.
The Leonids meteor shower will peak on Wednesday and Thursday night between midnight and dawn. Put your eyes to the east. USA Radio News.
Ladies and gentlemen, James Edwards breaks down the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally and trial. The SLAPP, S-L-A-P-P lawsuit, was brought by the nonprofit Integrity First for America. They call that IFA. Now, you and I grew up with a different IFA, ladies and gentlemen, than these clowns. I'll tell you what. But SLAPP, by the way, S-L-A-P-P equals Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. And what it is these lawsuits are designed to flat out chill free speech, to shut people down. They're not really seeking for a redress of grievance unless you kind of manipulate the term grievance. What these people really want is they want to basically bankrupt you, shut you down, make it to where you can't speak out or advocate or believe what you want to. And in my opinion, these SLAPP lawsuits are circumspect from the start. The judges should be very, very concerned about the agenda with these people. You follow the money trail and you go, wow, these people are a piece of work. Nevertheless, they filed a lawsuit unfairly. Donald Trump tried to say there was, you know, good people and bad people on both sides. There are both troublemakers and good people on both sides of the conflict. You know, that's always true in any conflict. There's always bad apples everywhere. Nevertheless, you got 24 defendants. You got 9 groups these defendants come from. And you got a lawsuit against them called SLAPP, S-L-A-P-P. They've got deep pockets. And so it's going to be a tough row to hoe for anybody to get out of this. Now, what I see in the trial primarily is this. There's not a fair news organization reporting on this at all, or an open-minded one, or even one that to report neutrally. They're all attack dog sites against the Unite the Right people. And what's fascinating is they're trying to use the worst of the Unite Right people, the bad apples in the barrel is what I would call it, against everybody, painting them with a broad brush, attacking them all with a real goal of bankrupting and shutting them all down. That's really what I see from an honest, neutral point of view, James.
Sam, you said so much there that I want to double down on. And yes, I mean, some of the people that I know that I that went there, family people, Christian people, hardworking, taxpaying people. One is a good friend of mine, Gene Andrews, who, and I don't mind using his name publicly because he's come on my show many times and even talked about going to the rally. I mean, Gene is a former Marine. He was a former high school history teacher, usher at his church, you know, custodian at his church. So these are the kind of people that I know that went there. But yes, I mean, there were all kinds. I mean, you have 5,000 people show up and it's going to be a mixed bag. And I can guarantee you the other side had that in spades. But so what's going on here with the co-defendants, okay? Those who supposedly, allegedly engaged in this conspiracy to commit violence. Now, we already covered that a lot of them had never even known of each other, much less spoken to each other, much less conspired to commit violence with one another in advance of this gathering. Now, some of them obviously did know each other. And so this is what you've got. You've got three different types of defendants. And it was really just a scattershot type thing. It really makes no sense who was called and who wasn't, or rather who was named as a defendant and who wasn't, because well, let me put it this way. On one level, you have Jason Kessler, who actually did get the permit and who was one of the lead organizers of the event. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, why not be the organizer of an event to try to save the statue of an American hero, Robert E. Lee? There's nothing wrong with that. But he was, in fact, the one who got the permit. OK, and so I guess it would make sense that he would be named, OK, in something like this. Richard Spencer, who was another big name, was going to be a speaker. Everybody knew who he was. So he was named. You understand that. And then you have some people who were named that were just there. They didn't have any role in the planning. They weren't in communication with any of the people that were organizing the event. They were just participants, and they got named. And then for good measure, just to smear everybody, you do have a Klan organization and a legitimate neo-Nazi organization, which I'm dubious as to whether or not these entities actually exist, but let's just say that they do for argument's sake, just to smear everyone, that they're added in there too. Even though I'm sure they had no contact with all of the other co-defendants. All right. So at no point were all of the co-defendants in cahoots with one another. But so you've got these three types of defendants here, and it can be a Nuremberg type, pardon the comparison, but a Nuremberg type of situation here, where first of all, even in a civil trial, the jury has to be unanimous, but the jury can differentiate, so they can say, okay, well, this guy obviously didn't have anything to do with it. We're going to let him go. But this guy, we're going to grant, you know, a $5 million judgment against him. And this organization, a $10 million, they can do that. But I'm telling you, Sam, even I, who have done this my entire adult life, I've talked about these issues and these organizations, and some of these individuals are friends of mine. It's difficult even for me, someone who covers this part of the political spectrum every week on my broadcast, to differentiate between the different actors here. And it's going to be impossible for a jury to do that, but they can say, okay, this guy is not guilty, this guy, judgment against him, and so on and so forth. But I think, again, we got to come back to this. And what we got to come back to is there is no evidence that they engage in a conspiracy. And I think the Heafy report will exonerate them. I think the video evidence will exonerate them. But it comes down to what will be admissible in court. It is still not determined whether the city of Charlottesville officially sanctioned report will be admissible as evidence, if you can believe it. So what you've got right now, again, is the plaintiff's attorney is going through different podcasts, different social media posts, and bringing up the very worst. And some of it is bad. Some of it is just unimaginably you wonder why, what would possess anybody to say something. But if the First Amendment doesn't protect unpopular or, dare I say, offensive speech, then what good is it? If the First Amendment doesn't protect people to be idiots and to say things that are unpopular and makes them look bad, then what good is it? I think that some of the jury will certainly look unfavorably on some of these co-defendants. But does that mean just because they said things that they, you know, said the N-word? I mean, that's something that's been brought up repeatedly. That they said these things, does that mean that they're guilty of engaging in a conspiracy? And that's what the jury's going to have to differentiate. And another thing that's just been remarkable in this whole thing is you've got these...
Conspiracy is a pretty high bar to document, too, because you've got to have foreplanning, forethought, evidence of intended violence. There's a lot there. Now, that's one concern that I have. The other concern that I have is trying all these people together lets the jury be confused about who's who, but also lets the prosecution paint everyone as equivalent to the worst character in the bunch, or the worst person in the bunch.
That's right.
So the problem with this is, even if you don't connect it to conspiracy, what you do if you're not very careful is the jury gets deceived into thinking, you know what, these people are all alike. They're all coordinated, they're all involved, and they're all as guilty as the worst guy or the bad, you know, whatever, the guy with the most evidence against them or whatever. And I see that as a massive problem. And then last point, the jury instructions are going to be really telling. James?
Well, I'll tell you this. Of course, the jury is not sequestered. Now, it does have to be unanimous. But they're not sequestered, so they can go home. Now, they are given instructions every day. Don't talk about it. Don't read anything, which is impossible. Impossible, I think. Impossible if you're not sequestered to do that. But I don't know. I've never been called to a jury. I mean, I would do my best not to, but it certainly would be difficult, especially with social media. Stuff pops up on your phone. You can't even avoid seeing, you know, spoilers all the time. But, you know, you've got these plaintiffs who are being represented by this organization that's been funded to the tune of $15 to $20 million just to prosecute this case, and the defendants are in some cases acting as their own attorneys. Because what people need to remember is attorneys aren't like doctors. You go into a doctor, any doctor will treat you. Well, at least that's the way it was before COVID. But typically, you think you go to a doctor's office and you'll get the treatment. Attorneys will not take on unpopular clients. I know they say that everybody's entitled to a robust defense. That
because the white that group is way equivalent at all to the non-vaxxed.
Well, and that's right. I mean, in attorneys, and I know this because I know a guy who was trying to find representation for some of these co-defendants, and he's an attorney himself, and he said he went through the Charlottesville phone book, and all of them turned them down flat. It's one after another said, can't do it. It would ruin my career. So you're left with the best of the rest. And I'm not saying that some of these attorneys are incompetent, but I don't think it's the best representation, perhaps, that money could buy. I mean, to say the least, of course, these people don't have a lot of money anyway, nor do I. But some of these people, like Richard Spencer, for instance, and another individual by the name of Christopher Cantwell, are serving as their own attorneys because they couldn't get anyone to represent them. And actually, going on right now, I'm listening to this, it is so bizarre. The land of the free is a joke. They are having not only to represent themselves, and I've heard them cross-examine many witnesses, but now they are having to question themselves on the stand. So they're asking themselves questions and then giving the answer. You want to talk about political theater. This is a sad, sad thing, but this is what you want to talk about, David and Goliath. I'm listening to it right now. This court is in session. I'm listening to it in one ear and talking to you with the other.
All right, hang tight, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment on this topic in seconds. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live.
Now, Mr. and Mrs. Sir Galahad, what seems to be the problem?
Well, it's just not working.
She's been very unrealistic.
Really?
Ever since he rescued me from the dragon, we've been drifting apart.
That's not true.
We were supposed to live happily ever after.
Now, this isn't a fairy tale.
At first, he was gallant and chivalrous, opening doors for me, holding my chair, taking my arm.
All right, I'm not as young as I used to be.
He simply isn't the man who swept me off my feet.
Well, you're not as young as you used to be.
Mr. Sir Galahad, maybe if you started by just holding Mrs. Sir Galahad's hand when you're together.
Really?
Yes, try it.
Okay.
All right.
Go on, take your hand. Careful, little oil.
Marriage. You're never too far apart when you're still holding hands. From your neighbors, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Now, look into each other's eyes. That's right. Raise your visor.
Oh, they're blue, dear. Yeah.
For more tips on strengthening your marriage, visit family.mormon.org.
Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of one-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. James Edwards, thepoliticalcesspool.org, is breaking down the Charlottesville rally and Unite the Right trial going on. And it's really turned into a circus. It's turned into theater. Now, the enemies of free speech would basically have you believe that, hey, these white supremacists, these Hitler-esque haters of all that we hold dear, they're painting them as just the enemy to the nth degree, that they're using this intentionally as their stage, that they're mocking the courts, mocking the trials, using this as their stage to get their hate-filled agenda out. I submit that couldn't be further from the truth, James.
Say again one second, Sam. My audio cut out for just a second.
The Unite the Right people are being attacked basically on this idea that they're using this as a stage to spew their hate.
Yep.
And I submit that couldn't be further from the truth. They're desperate, without counsel, without guidance in the courts, clinging for dear life without any money against a machine, sir.
Well, you know, and we talked about that last night, too. That was actually a Washington Post article on Friday, I believe, Thursday or Friday, saying, even though they've been deplatformed from social media, they found a new platform, the court. Well, I mean, first of all, the coverage of this is completely alien. What I read in the establishment-controlled press coverage of this is totally alien to what I'm listening when I listen to this for 8 hours a day. And I've listened to this from 9 to 5 every day for the last 4 weeks. Okay, 90% plus every day. They're talking about how devastating the case has been that the plaintiff's attorneys have put forth. I don't think they've produced any evidence at all to the question at hand, and that is that these people who, I don't know everybody that's a co-defendant, but the ones I do know, they're not criminals. They don't have a long rap sheet. So the idea that they all came together to conspire to commit some sort of a huge mass violent beat them up, kill them type demonstration is just laughable. That they have been so devastating in their case is laughable. Now, what they have been effective in doing is, of course, making these people look bad, and these people gave them some ammunition to do that. I got to say it, they did. What's going to come down to is this, and that is, when the defense finally begins to present its case, which will happen, I think, as early as later today, after 4 weeks of reading impolite comments that the defendants have made, what will be admissible? If they can make the Heafy report admissible, if they can make this video evidence admissible, I mean, it's going to come down to who you're going to believe, the plaintiff's attorneys or your lying eyes. And it's just going to be that cut and dry and that simple. And it's going to come down to whether the jury can say, hey, I don't like these guys. These guys offend me. I wouldn't want to be around these guys, but you know what? They're not guilty here. There's a lot of societal pressure for a verdict here or a judgment here that's going to come down against the defendants. They are, of course, cast as the bad guys, and the jury's going to know that just as sure as the jury knew that in the Derek Chauvin trial. But what kind of jury are we going to have here? One of the things I got to listen to, Sam, very interestingly, as I listened to all of this, was the jury selection process. And there was not one, not two, but many, many jurors who, when asked questions during the part of the jury selection process, were saying, hey, the only racism I see in society is racism against white people. The only sort of violence that I see is violence inflicted against white people. And there was a lot of people who were saying things like that. And what you have here in this particular jurisdiction is this is a federal court case. Filed in federal court in the Western District of Virginia. So this is not a city of Charlottesville court. The city of Charlottesville is a college town, so of course that skews to be more left-wing. But this is the Western District of Virginia. It does include Charlottesville, but it does not include Northern Virginia, which is a liberal bastion. It includes all of Western Virginia. And why don't you go look at a map of Western Virginia and see how they voted in 2016? It is blood red for Trump. And you're going to have some of those people on the jury. Now, you do have a racially and ideologically diverse jury. You have blacks on the jury. You have whites on the jury. I know this for a fact. You have people who would probably lean a little more towards our way of thinking. You have some who would disagree with us, ideologically speaking. And that's okay. I mean, you would expect that on a jury. But it's not as if everybody on this jury are going to be Antifa from the city of Charlottesville. So it's just going to come down to, can they withstand the pressure? Can they think for themselves based upon the evidence and not the emotional feelings that the plaintiff's attorneys have tried to inflict upon them by making these people look bad? And again, what will the judge allow? The judge, this is an interesting character. He's 85 years old, 85-year-old judge, and he's been fair. I don't know what his political beliefs are, but in listening to him every day in court, he's been very fair, I think, and even-handed in this handling of this thing. And I would tell you otherwise if I'd say, hey, you know, this guy, I think he's one of us, or man, this guy's really out to get us. He's been fair. So I don't know. I think they've got a puncher's chance, but if it goes all right, badly, it is going to chill free speech in a way that I don't know. I don't know if I've seen anything else in my lifetime that will have the effect on free speech as multimillion dollar judgments being handed down against all of these co-defendants.
All right, let me throw this out. Here's mainstream news coverage, quote Vice. This couple survived the Unite the Right car attack, but the trauma tore them apart. So they survived the murderous car attack, but it was the trauma that got those guys. Now, the guy that used the car that ran into people or whatever, there's a big old debate of how that all went down in truth, but set that aside, he's not even a defendant here, is he?
No, actually he is, Sam, and I'm glad you brought that up. He is one of the defendants, but of course he's already in prison and serving a life sentence plus 417 years. I forgot to mention that, and he does have an attorney there. You got to understand, there are about a half dozen different attorneys plus two pro se, which means Richard Spencer and Chris Cantwell specifically representing them own their own selves. And they all go up one after another to cross-examine each and every witness. So, yes, James Fields is the person. Now, James Fields, and this is something that's come out, he knew nobody. He knew none of the co-defendants, and none of the co-defendants knew him. But he is on trial. Now, I don't know how much a civil sanction or a civil judgment for a guy serving life plus
hold on,
half
it won't make
of,
any difference
century.
At all, James. And this is why I bring this up, because you know what? You got AP, Associated Press. Woman recalls complete terror of Charlottesville car attack. BuzzFeed News, a woman who narrowly escaped being run over by a car at the Unite the Right rally describes complete terror scene. So they don't want him there for any reason. He's already gone to jail forever. An attorney being there is a waste of time. The whole scenario, all that does, though, is, again, put that guy as the worst. And y'all are just like him is their inference. It's dishonest. Yeah. It's immoral.
I'm glad you brought that up.
It's bogus.
I'm glad you brought that up, and I wasn't purposefully omitting him when I went through some of the people that were co-defendants. It's just as though he has been almost an afterthought. Nobody's really focusing on him. His attorney comes up and asks each of the co-defendants if they knew him, and they say no, and then he rests. So it's just basically showing there was no connection whatsoever there. And it's interesting, too, because a lot of the witnesses that the plaintiff's attorneys have called are some of their own plaintiffs. But they're also calling a lot of the defendants. So the defendants get to come up and get grilled by the prosecution, but then their own attorneys get to cross-examine them. So I think it's interesting that the defendants are being called up by the prosecution, but then when they come up to present their own defense, I guess, you know, presumably they'll go back up onto the stand again, but with a different set of questions. There was something I was going to say that was very important, and I lost it on
so
that
I
rabbit
submit
trail.
You that the news, usually, James, stays out of these things in the middle of the trials. Right now, they're doing just the opposite. They're quadrupling down and literally painting everyone as the murderer in the car. That's really the bottom line.
Well,
what they're doing.
I was going to say this about
not only are you
the plaintiff's injuries
car,
is what I was going to comment.
Hate-filled murderer in a car, just so you know.
If you weren't hit by the car. But of course, that guy was just somebody that nobody knew that showed up, and
doesn't
of course,
matter.
You know
that's why he's in this case.
Other side
using this to make it the worst it can be.
Now, there, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, his car was being beaten with bats, and that he was surrounded on all sides by the Antifa, and so he gunned it to try to get out of there, and then people got injured, and of course the other side will say, well, he did it on purpose because he was a Nazi and he just wanted to kill people. You know, that's neither here nor there with really regard to this case. But yes, I some of the people were injured. But now, interestingly, one of the guys who was a plaintiff said he was injured. He was injured so badly he couldn't play basketball anymore. And, you know, so he's seeking damages. But there was pictures that apparently came up a couple of years after the effect that show him playing basketball. Now, I don't know if that was something that was photoshopped or what, but there's a lot of question there. And then another one said that she was so traumatized by the attacks that she couldn't open a book. She can't even open a book and read a book anymore. Now, why exactly you couldn't open a book? Because, you know, you saw something horrific. I don't know.
I'm so
but she also went
covers.
On to pass the bar
in your radio.
But she went on to pass the bar and become an attorney. So that's pretty incredible. If you can't open a book or read, you can become an attorney. Though, you know, I don't know. I don't want to snipe at the plaintiffs. I think they're being used, maybe willfully. Maybe they want to be a part of this. Maybe they're getting paid by the attorneys that have made $15 million. I don't know. But they're not going to get any compensation from these co-defendants who don't have
our
two
prayer.
Nipples to rub together. But I don't want to bring them into the crosshairs.
As we finish the hour, James, we're about out of time. I want to just really say I pray that the jury is wise enough to realize that, you know what, guilt or innocence is an individual reality, and people are assumed innocent until proven guilty, and they've set a high bar for proof of guilt, and I hope they don't lump them all together, and I hope they don't violate reality and say, because I don't like them, I'm going to barbecue them or prosecute them. Let's look at the reality of the charges. Did they create a conspiracy, number one? And look at them individually and say they're innocent until we have enough proof of guilt. I hope the jury is wise enough, or at least enough people on the jury are wise enough to really assess that openly, honestly, and morally, James. That's what I hope.
There's something important that's got to be said to your point right there. But I first very quickly want to go back when I said I don't want to bring the plaintiffs into the crosshairs. I, of course, meant the rhetorical crosshairs. But you never know what's going to be taken literally and not. But, you know, and I wish them the best. I hope they find God and can be productive citizens. But in a civil case, a little bit different than a criminal case. Criminal case, it is the jury has to weigh the evidence and find the standard of measurement is beyond a reasonable doubt. In a civil case, the bar is lower. It is a preponderance of the evidence. Now, again, to me, there has been no evidence. The only evidence is that these people said reckless and stupid things and immature things, and it makes them look bad. But will that poison the jury's mind enough to say, okay, well, because we don't like them, we're going to find them guilty and rule against them? We'll find out soon. But this is high stakes. It's high stakes not just for the people on trial, but also for freedom of speech. I do believe that, and that's another reason why I've taken such a keen interest in this case, which
ladies
I'm
and gentlemen,
listening to
pray.
Now and will continue to do.
Pray for honesty, pray for truth, pray for discernment, pray for all the things that matter, because it's not just these defendants that are on trial. I think it's every one of us when it comes to the five guarantees of the First Amendment. Pray hard, stand for truth, and do what is right. James Edwards, thank you so much. We'll talk soon, brother.
Love you, buddy. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, hour one of the can, hour two coming up, simulcast with Brady on TV, the Sheriff Mac Show coming up on your radio. Hang tight. God save the Republic of the United States of America.